You're listening to Big Blend Radio's English Connection Show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. Hey, everybody, it is time to go to England, but we're not, right? Every time Glenn is on the show, he's usually telling us about England because, after all, his show is The English Connection. But however, Glenn just crossed over the border again. I mean, he was on the show a couple months ago talking about Wales, and now he's in Scotland. So basically, Glenn will go anywhere in the British Isles, I believe. He'll take you to France, I believe, too. So well, he went over the border. Yeah, France? You'd take people to France? Really?
France is lovely. And I speak French as well, so that's even better.
I don't know how you speak French. I cannot get it. I learned a new term. Biscoff? No, I can't, it's out. It's out. So you need to come to Louisiana so you can help me.
Let me just jump in there, because when I was in Edinburgh, I was in the castle and I heard these French people talking. So I went and had a word with them. And it was lovely because I was speaking French to them. And then when I was in another place, in another tourist attraction, these French couple were trying to book their tickets and they couldn't make the woman understand. So I was doing translation. That was great. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. And knowing French, like when you went to Canada on your family history journey, yeah. you went to Quebec, right? And wasn't that French?
That was, it's lovely to speak French. Just like going home again. Yeah.
Okay, great. So we have to have another language conversation on a show. Yeah. That last time, this time we'll talk French. Because our friends in Louisiana, they're always saying a whole bunch of stuff. We're just looking at them going, you know, I'll speak Swahili back to you if you don't tell me what you're saying, you know. But I think that's it's a really interesting language. I just have to learn some basics. But that's amazing. So crossing over to Scotland, did you get yourself a kilt? That's the most important thing. Nancy wants to know. No, I
didn't buy a kilt because I don't, as far as I'm aware, I haven't got any names that I researched that have got a tartan.
And
if I was going to get a kilt, I would have to get the correct tartan because it has to be right. So I've never really looked into it because I haven't got any really strong Scottish connections, because all of my family come from Norfolk and North Suffolk. Mm. So we're not generally speaking Scottish.
Now, going to Edinburgh, and I went when I was a little girl and I loved it and I fell in love with the castle. And I remember as a little girl seeing the Royal Jewels, the gallery of the Royal Jewels, and looking out. And so now seeing your pictures and I'm like, I'm kind of reliving it and going, wow, this is amazing, because it was so big to me as a little girl.
Of course.
What's it like as an adult? Is it still that, like, wow?
Well, it is, because you're walking up to the castle, and being as the castle is on this massive rock, this volcano, you're walking actually right up against the rock face. So you're sort of weaving your way around the rock, because it's actually perched on the top of this extinct volcano. So it's really, I don't know, inspiring, because it's so massive. And well, you can see, I mean, from the picture behind me, I was standing at the top of the castle, looking down onto the what they call the battery. So you can see just in the foreground, there are a few cannon. They're at the next level down beside the mountain, so to speak. And then all that way down there is where the actual city is. So you can see that you're literally on like a lump like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is amazing. It is.
And it's tilting.
Sorry?
It's tilting a little bit.
Well, that's me, probably. I don't know.
No. But the castle itself is the rock.
The amazing thing about the castle is that you're all the way up there, but you're on solid ground. You know, you're on a rock, and
that's weird.
It's you've got nature and you've got the built environment as well. So you've got the man-made bits hanging on the side of this mountain, which is nature. And you're walking around and you've got a building, but in the middle of or beside this building is this rock poking out, because obviously you can't knock the rock about too much. So it's just amazing.
Now, the view behind you is you looking out from Edinburgh Castle down over Edinburgh itself, right?
Yeah, this the bit behind me from the castle is actually the new city, because where the castle is more or less where the old city was, that end of the town. In front of the castle, where the green space is, there used to be a great big lake, and that was sort of a bit smelly. So there weren't much of a city going on there, but that is where the new city was developed. So that's the new city, even though that's several hundred years old, but that's the new city.
But it looks old to me, and
Well, yeah,
looking
it
at the
is. Yeah, I mean,
buildings, I mean, are
there's a
amazing.
lot. Yeah, a lot of them buildings are Georgian and earlier, so they're sort of 200, 300 years old, you know.
So what's in a name like Georgian, right? And so here today we're actually in Georgia, and
Yeah.
then there's Georgia, in the Eastern European side, right? There's
Yeah.
Georgia.
Yeah.
And so what, I mean, was that an era, the Georgian
Yes.
era?
Yeah, the Georgian was because we had four kings called George. We had King George the first, second, third, and fourth, all ran behind one after the other. So
Okay.
King George the first was 1714 to 1727.
Oh, wow.
George the second was 1727 to 1760. George the third was 1760 to 1820. And George the fourth was 1820 to 1830. So it was over 100 years, and they were all King George. So
Wow.
that is a Georgian period. Most of the Georgian period buildings that you think about are sort of late 18th century. So from the sort of 1770, 1780s, they're typically Georgian. And then after
Oh.
1810, you've got what's called the Regency, which is when King George the Fourth, who was still the prince, he took over from his dad because this was Mad King George, who would
Oh,
said
yes.
to have sort of lost his head a bit. So his son took over as regent for the last 10 years of
Oh.
George the Third's reign.
Wow. See, this is a good history lesson here, because I think
Well,
because we always look at architecture as, oh, this is a Georgian building. And
yes.
I'm going, I don't get it. I just
No.
never quite got
Well,
it
you
because
see,
there's Victorian, so I know it's from the Victorian era, but there's a
yeah.
certain style that is attached to it.
Yes. I mean, it's mainly because it's sort of such a long period of time. So you had the Georgians who were there for over 100 years, and you got Victoria, who was there from 1837 to 1901. So you've got her there for like 64 years. So you've got specific periods in history that had, or they developed their own style. It was when stylized things were happening. It weren't just medieval, or you know, it was a style. And it's quite funny actually. What I've just done there is something I learned when I was at primary school. Behind my headmaster's desk was a frieze that ran around the wall with all the kings and queens of England, and
Oh, yeah.
I taught myself all the kings and queens of England from 1702 right up to the present day, and I still remember all their dates.
My gosh, Glenn, I
Yeah.
remember that. I think I told you about I had like the history of England. This it, like a it was like a kid's encyclopedia, so it was,
Yeah.
but it had, when you open it up, the inside covers had like this pullout of all of them. And
Yeah.
but I didn't remember like what you remember.
No,
Apparently,
it's
I went on
just.
to Africa, so I went African,
Well,
and
I said,
their royalty lines too. I mean, it's hard to remember everyone's lines of
yeah, of
all of
course it
these
is.
families,
But it
so
is
it's good
also
to revisit.
amazing. It's also amazing that you remember things from when you were like 10 and they
Yeah.
just stick in your head.
Well, Edinburgh, I was probably there around maybe 9 years old, eight or
Yeah.
nine. And I just remember going in and going like, I know about this stuff. And at that age, but I really did. I was a big reader and read stuff I probably shouldn't have at that age, but I was fascinated. No, nothing naughty, nothing. Well, maybe I just didn't understand what that part was, but I was really fascinating about the world.
Yeah.
And I think because we traveled and you know, we didn't have much television out in Kenya and stuff like that. And then going to England, I was just like, this is some like crazy stuff. They have these big castles, you know, and these lords and kings and queens and everything. And but it also like tied, this sounds weird, but it also tied to the African cultures, because you also had the king of, you know, their tribe, their main ruler, and
Yeah.
they wore capes. And I just did an interview. It'll be airing May 3rd on Big Blend Radio with a master feather worker, Rick Sennicol. He is a feather worker, and he reproduces capes in the old Hawaiian style with using feathers and the
Right.
helmets that the royalty wore
Yes.
in
Yeah.
battle. And it goes back to James Cook, and the royalty in England received them. So these capes, these big crowns and headdresses, this was something that went around the world. And to me, as a little girl, I knew that from the African side, like the kings and people like that would have big poofy things going on. Maybe it's feathers, it could be whatever. But a cape, for some reason, was also like used as a warrior cloak, or you know, going.
Yes.
And so in England, you guys did the same thing. So it kind of
Yes.
shows humanity has been doing these things without maybe not quite meeting each other yet. I don't know what, I mean,
Yeah. I
it's
mean,
kind of
thinking about
interesting.
that, you know, if we remember back to the coronation of the king not long ago, one of the main parts of the ceremony, apart from, you know, the crown, which is obviously what he has to wear, being the king. But a main part of it was to put this great big cape around his shoulders. And that is another mark of office, you know. So he had the crown, he had the orb in one hand, and he had the scepter in the other, which is, you know, a scepter is a big stick, basically, and the orb is the
Oh,
world.
I was wondering about that, because you talked about that in your article. I was like, what's that?
Yeah. And then you have this great big cloak. And that is all part of the regalia, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's funny when you start looking at international things, but all of these people had these great big cloaks, which was a mark of seniority.
So when
Interesting.
you were in Edinburgh and you're looking at all this royal, doesn't it connect back to England's history too? When you're going to castles and some kind of connection there, did you find a little bit of England and Scotland?
Well, the thing
And did
is,
you find cheese scones? Wait a minute, let's go. That's important.
no, I didn't find any cheese scones, but I had some haggis. Haggis is lovely. I love haggis.
Really?
Anyway,
Okay.
the crown of Scotland is a separate crown, because if you remember your early history,
Uh-oh.
it's in after it Elizabeth the First. You see, you had Mary, Queen of Scots, who was fighting for the Scottish and the English
Yeah.
crown. And then you had James the First of England and the Sixth of Scotland, who then combined the English and the Scottish, because before then they were separate. They were actually separate kingdoms. But when King James took over from Elizabeth the First, because Elizabeth the First didn't have any children, so James the First of England and the Sixth of Scotland then took over, and then the two crowns were combined. But Scotland has still got its own royal crown and orb and sceptre, or sword and sceptre.
Wow.
And they, when the king first visited Scotland after the coronation, he was presented with the crown of Scotland. He didn't put it on, because I asked the girl in the crown room. I said, you know, what does the our monarch ever wear the crown? And they say no, because the English crown is superior and it includes the crown of Scotland. So therefore, when they come to Scotland, they are presented with the crown,
Yeah.
but they don't put it on. It's
Wow.
all this stuff that we do in England that is all very strange, but
How to, you know, bow to the queen and all of that too, right?
all of this stuff, you know.
Oh, and how is your royal family? It sounds like everyone needs some, you know, good healing and a lot of
Yeah.
some.
We haven't really heard very much recently, but I mean, it
It's
is,
sad.
well, yeah, it's very sad, and it's in a way, I think it's really good the way that they're dealing with it, because they're making themselves more human, more more like me and you, because they're going through the same things that everybody else is going through. And that also proves that it doesn't matter who you are and how much money you've got. If you've got an illness, you've got an illness, and you have to
Yeah.
deal with it in the same way as everybody else does.
We all come in and go the same way in some way.
Exactly.
We all have
Exactly.
a first and last breath, right? And
Yeah.
it's a yeah, and I think by doing that too, they're also giving themselves more privacy for their kids. I think it's important about the children
Well,
and
it's
because, you know.
very, very, very important for the children to be able to be told in the way that the family want to tell them, rather than in the way the newspapers want to tell them. So that's very important.
Now, going over to Edinburgh, I wanted to ask you this because I know also I probably asked you the same thing in Wales, and so we'll answer for both. Do you need, like, when we are here in the States and we hop over to Mexico, we need our driver's license, or, you know, we need to prove who we are, and some need a passport for so many days and stuff like that. So in England, you can just cross the border, but what about your travelers that come out? Will they need an extra visa if they're already okay to come to
No,
England or anything?
no, no. England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland are all one country. So you're not going over a national border. Although some people would like to think that Scotland is a different country, because they've gone for their independence. But actually, no, you don't go over any borders. You go over a line, so to speak, but no, you don't.
Like a
Funny
state
enough,
line for us. Yeah.
it's like a county or a state line. Yeah, I mean, there's no difference. Funnily enough, when I was on the train going up to Edinburgh, I had a group of Americans sitting in the carriage with me, and they were talking, and they said, when do we go over the border? Well, you don't know. Unless you look at a map, you don't know
Oh.
you're on, because there is no difference. When you're driving, there is a sign saying "Welcome to Scotland," the same as there is when you go into a town, "Welcome to
Yeah, we
whatever."
have that here. Yeah.
Yeah, but in it as a border, there is no border.
That's well, I think it's just a good travel tip for people to realize that you can go to
Yes.
more than one, you know, you can go to all these destinations on one passport kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Yeah.
go and so extend your travels because the history, if you're interested in history, which is obviously the main focus of this conversation, is the history. It's all connected in some way, I believe, all of it,
Yeah, I
you
mean,
know.
and the interesting thing is that I got on the train in Peterborough, where my son lives, and it is only a 4-hour journey up to Edinburgh on a
That's
train.
nothing. Yeah.
I think it's about a 5.5-hour journey or 5-hour journey from London on the train, straight train journey from London to Edinburgh. And the journey is gorgeous, because for a lot of that, you go along the coast. So you're the train looking out over the sea, and it's beautiful.
Oh, is it more cost effective than driving to go on the train, do you think?
Yeah. Jen, if there's only one or two of you, yes. I mean, if there's
Okay.
six of you, then that's probably cheaper to take the car. But
Okay.
it's gonna take you a long while. It's probably gonna take you 7 or 8 hours to
Oh.
drive. But it's not far. When you think that it's going to take you 3 days to cross America, it's not far, is it?
Takes a little bit more than 3 days, depending. Yeah, if you have
Yeah.
people driving with you. I always tell Nancy, don't worry, remember it's only 3 days. And then we start driving. I'm like, well, I lied.
Yeah.
I lied. You know, because we keep pulling over and looking at things, you know. And if you go through Texas, you're in big trouble if you like history, because there's a historic marker every mile. Like
Right.
something happened here, and then we learned the hard way you can't get anywhere if you keep pulling over, like, well, what happened? We want to know. And if you
Yeah.
don't stop, it's bugging you,
Yeah, of
you know,
course.
because what went down? You know, was there a massacre here? I mean, what? Well, because there were a lot of massacres out there and things, you know, there
Yeah,
were so
quite.
many. Well, that sounds nice, doesn't it? So going to Edinburgh Castle, you saw the armor, you saw the big royal jewels, you saw like you went down in the jail area, the
Oh, the
dungeon.
jail. The jail is
Ew.
amazing. It
I know,
really
I want
is.
to do those too. Yeah.
Yeah, I love parts of buildings that really show what they were used for. And the display in the prison is really good because they've got it done how it would have been done with hammocks and old wooden settles and things. It's really well done. And the interesting thing, which I didn't realize until I went there, was that they actually had prisoners from the American War of Independence over there in Edinburgh Castle. They had French revolutionaries who were housed
Whoa.
in Edinburgh Castle, as well as obviously some English people when they were having problems on the Scottish border, because the Scottish and English border has always been a problem in the past. You know, there was always fighting between the English and the Scots. So the castle, obviously being a major fort as well, was a place where they housed prisoners of war, so to speak.
Wow, that's an interest. Oh, we need to do a prisoners of war show. We need to do that. No, because
Oh,
it's interesting. We
it's
kept them all over this
fascinating.
country. It is fascinating, you know. And when you think of the Revolution War, the American Revolution War, and it's interesting because Scotland and England at times fought together, but then also a lot of the Scottish, didn't they go to Canada and then they went, Louisiana was a big area, the South, the American South is big on the Scottish. I mean, and it's Virginia. I mean, when I look at this history of Scottish over here, it's different than the history of the English. It's,
Of course it
but
is. Yeah.
it is different.
Yeah.
And it's their lives, it's, and there's a whole Irish side, like the Appalachian
Oh, yeah.
Mountains and everything too, you know, Scottish
Yeah.
and Irish more than English. And then some areas are more like, oh, we're British. Sorry,
Yes.
Glenn.
Well, you see, the thing
Do
is,
you know what I mean? It's interesting.
the different countries had their emigrations for different reasons and at different times.
Oh, good point.
See?
Yeah.
The English, a lot of the English went over to America during the 1600s and the 1700s, whereas a lot of Irish went over to America during the 1840s during the potato famine. And then a lot of the Scottish went over in the 18th century when the Lords of the Manor were clearing all the lands. And,
Oh.
you know, because what they did is basically is they chucked all the peasants out of the villages. So then a lot of Scottish people had to go and live somewhere else. So a lot of them went to America or wherever. So, you know, lots of different factions went to different places at different times for different reasons. So it's a fascinating study on its own.
So you go to these historic sites, and then one of them, because we did touch on royalty, is the Royal Yacht Britannia.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a big deal. And I started really looking it up. And this I'm gonna, I know it's a yacht, but it was like a ship.
Oh
This
yes,
went,
it is. Yeah.
this was like a, like the greeting party of England to everyone, like in
Yeah. It's a floating palace, really. I mean, basically what it was that the royal family could then go all around the world and take everything with them. So if they were going to go to Australia or America or wherever, they could actually go in the yacht. And they could have all their entourage on the yacht with them all the time. They could do all their normal work. And then instead of expecting the host to put them up and the host to provide everything, then the queen could provide everything and they could come to her. So this was really when the Commonwealth was big, so that she would go to the Commonwealth countries and go there as head of state. And invite the people on the Commonwealth to join her on her yacht. So she would be entertaining them rather than her turning up expecting them to entertain her. So it's a different way
that's
of
something you
looking at it.
never hear about that much. You know what I
No,
mean?
but that's what they did. They used obviously they did used to go and have parties on land. But you know, a lot of it was about the the royal family receiving people on board the yacht, which was a sort of a palace, you know.
That's nice, though. That's a give and take versus I'm here, you need to entertain me.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the unexpected drop-in visitor, you know.
Yes,
we don't
exactly.
like those. like those. It's like, what you want? You know?
It's a bit like your unexpected visitor who comes but then takes you out for a meal.
Oh, we like that.
That's the sort you want. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah, and they don't stay too long. Because they always say a visitor after 3 days, a house starts to, you know, starts, no, gets too much. You got to leave after 3 days, you know. Mary King's close. So explain what a close is, because I think that's something that's a little bit of a different term for us over here in the States.
A close is often a sort of small enclosed area. So it can be called a yard, or it can be called a close, or it can be just an area that is part of another building. So we'll say, like, for instance, in King's Lynn, we have lots of yards, or we did have lots of yards that were in the backyard of a pub. So it would be called the King's Arms Yard, because it belonged to the King's Arms. So to get to the yard, you had to go through the door or through the archway of the King's Arms to get into the yard. So it's more or less like that. It's an enclosed space. And in Edinburgh, what there were they weren't necessarily enclosed, but they were long, 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 very narrow alleyways. So it's a little tiny street. It's only sort of like two people wide. And it's an alleyway in between buildings. And it would be very long. So, you know, you're talking 500 yards long. You know, you're talking a really long yard.
Mm-hmm.
And off these little alleyways would be buildings, houses, shops, you name it. And this particular area was partially demolished to make way for building of a council officers type building. So it was a local government building. So they basically leveled it off at ground level. Now, bearing in mind that Edinburgh is on steep hills like that.
Okay.
So you can imagine that you've got ground level here. If you took off the buildings at ground level, you've still got all of this bit that is still there. So basically, the bits that are left are all these buildings that are below the level of the ground.
Wow.
And they were just sort of left. And they're now
so it's like ruins. Yeah.
It's fantastic to visit. But the trouble is, as they are beneath the government building, you're not allowed to take photos. So I couldn't take any pictures of it. But there's a really good website, so you can have a look at it. But it's fascinating to walk around all these buildings that are actually underground.
Wow. Wow. Because I was looking it up and I was like, this is fascinating for people. And for those who are listening, instead of watching this on YouTube, I've got a link in the show notes on YouTube so you can see Glenn do hand maneuverments to explain how these buildings are underground. But so when you were there, speaking of buildings, you stayed in, like, you know, we're talking about hotels all the time, and you're always into having a unique experience.
Yes,
and
definitely.
you stayed in, like, you said it was a stately house that turned into swanky lodgings, it looked like.
Yeah, it's a beautiful
fit
beautiful
for a
house.
King.
Well, yeah, I don't probably not quite up to that standard, but it's definitely fit for me. It's a beautiful building set in its own grounds, with a golf course and a spa, swimming pool, and there was a little church as well, just across the river. There's a little tiny river running through the park as well, and a lovely little private church, which was a really beautiful thing to visit. So yeah, I mean, this was outside Edinburgh, about 9 or 10 miles outside Edinburgh itself, but it was a really nice place to stay, because, you know, you got the best of both worlds. You know, you're in the middle of the countryside in a beautiful parkland with a gorgeous building, but you're only 9 miles down the road from the center of Edinburgh. And Edinburgh is actually a relatively small city. You know, it's not that big to walk about. So it's a
Yeah.
lovely, really lovely place to visit.
It's nice that you have the countryside and the city, and the city is more historic. You know what I mean? That you have that history
I mean, and
on top of it.
there are no high rise. You can see the picture of Edinburgh in front of me or behind me.
Yeah.
There's no high rise there.
No, and they're just tall buildings, but not like, yeah, we're not like New York.
They're not
Yeah.
70 stories, you know, anything stupid like that. You know, there's
No,
nothing
no.
like that in Edinburgh, which
That's
is lovely.
awesome. So now you're going to do more tours over there now, right?
Diane wants to go now, so I have to take her.
Oh, that's awesome. So no cheese scones yet. But
No.
haggis, that was
Haggis.
good.
Haggis was
Okay.
good.
Okay, good, good. But you know, you guys share some of the same things too. Mr. Whippy in Scotland. Yeah, it's got to be there.
I think I saw some people eating Mr. Whippies. Yeah, so
Well, that's a Mr. It's important to support the Mr. Whippies,
of
you
course
know,
it
the Mr. Whippies of the world. I love it. Well, Glenn, everyone, I keep up with him at norfolk-tours.co.uk. The links are in the show notes, as is his article about this. You can see the photos and read his outline about what you can experience in Scotland. And if you want to go, go with Glenn. So keep up with him. Everything's in the show notes. Thank you so much, Glenn. Always fun. We stayed on
Thanks very
topic,
much.
kind of, didn't we? We did
Well,
okay.
nearly.
Nearly, well, 80% mark. We did good. Thanks, Glenn.
See you
Thank
later.
you for joining us for Big Blend Radio's English Connection show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. If you're planning a vacation to England or looking up your family history in England, visit norfolk-tours.co.uk to connect with Glenn. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.